listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, live, live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, June 21st. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here, Michael, for a lot of reasons, the first of which we have a special guest, but the other, it is summer solstice.
So it is.
Happy summer solstice to everybody.
Absolutely. I second that. And it's a wonderful time of change. And in the spirit of that, kind of exploring metaphysics and things, I welcome to those joining us live. Appreciate you taking the time out of your week to join us, contribute to chat, and just all the wonderful things that you add to this. And thanks to those that take the time to catch up with us in the archives. I can talk. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. As always, we're going to begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are: 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So tonight we have a very exciting guest, and we have a wonderful topic. And I'd like to welcome Tabitha Hines. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Michael. Thank you.
So happy to have you.
I'm excited to have Tabitha here, too, because we're going to take a new kind of a different twist on this topic tonight of do no harm, do right.
Mm-hmm. And I'm really looking forward to getting into this discussion. And we think a great way to start this is to talk about, or for me to read, the Inner Oracle card. And Tabitha, you had this idea because this was your most pulled card of 2022, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. It got pulled a lot.
And we just had Wendy, our card keeper, shout out to her for tracking this in the first place to let us see these patterns. But we had her on last week, and we were talking about that. You know, sometimes the messages that the universe is trying to throw at us, and I think probability and how, what are the odds? What are the odds that that would happen, that you'd get this card pulled, which, by the way, is number 28. It is appropriately in the service to self and others suit. And there are 54 cards in the deck. What are the odds? So this card, we're going to just read it real quick, is do no harm, do right is the most powerful principle to live by. Doing no harm includes words and actions to the self and others. Doing right means to also take positive action where there is a need without infringing on the free will or rights of others. Always strive for the highest good for all concerned, including yourself. Do no harm and do right establishes the foundation for all other principles.
So, Tabitha, let me ask you, when it first started becoming evident to you in 2022, what was your first response? Like, what was your first emotional reaction when that card was pulled for you?
So what's really interesting is and every time you guys pulled this card for me, my reaction was always, I didn't think I was doing harm to anybody else. I thought I was a good person, you know?
Yeah.
You know, because I, and that's the thing, is it's funny because I actually teach Silver Sneakers, which is a fitness program meant for seniors or older people to try and keep them active, and they've learned that exercise keeps them out of, or like keeps them from going to the doctor more often. It helps them with pain, it helps them keep mobile and stuff, and it's actually helped people avoid surgeries. And so when I teach this, I always get compliments and how great I teach and how fun I am. And so when I got that card, I was like, but look at all these people I'm helping. You know, and so I kept thinking, maybe I'm doing them more harm than not. But that's when you guys had pointed out that it wasn't just harm to others, it can also be self-harm. And then that's when the light bulb went off.
Oh,
that makes a lot more sense for me. And unfortunately, my internal critic, or I like to call it my self-bully, is one of, like, is very, very hard on me, and is very hard on, like, mistakes that I've made, and is very critical of everything that I do.
When did that finally occur to you? At what part of the year, last year, did it finally, that light bulb go on?
Honestly, probably later in the year. It was probably closer to the holidays, because I remember it was probably about Thanksgiving when you guys had mentioned, because I just kept thinking every time it was pulled, okay, you got to look at who you're hurting. Who are you hurting when you're doing these things? And then that's when later on in the year that you guys had mentioned, and the holidays are always a really hard time for me, especially. And so, and I mean, a lot of people are that way. I mean, it's the highest suicide and murder rates are around the holidays. It's not easy for anybody.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to apologize. Because this is something where the equals and opposites of whatever cards are, that I could have taken initiative or thought of taking initiative very earlier on in the year to say it can also mean the self, not just others. So I want to just get that clear, that I'm sorry that it took so long for me to say something.
No, no problem. I mean, I just was taking it in the more term of like, the doctor's, what is it called, the oath that they take, the
Hippocratic oath.
Thank you. That they take for their patients. I was thinking in terms of that you don't want to do harm to others, and I didn't even think of it as being an internal thing. And I think that's why the card was still being pulled, is you're not getting it.
And
so,
you know,
what was the first, when you got that light bulb moment, what was the first thing then that you recognized about yourself in that, you know, self-critic?
So that's the thing, is I've always had a really hard time with my self-bully. My internal voice is very critical. I think sometimes overly critical. I mean, I can't compare myself to others because, you know, I can't hear their voices, but I get anxiety. I suffer from depression, and I also have suicidal thoughts. And it's very hard to explain to people what that feels like and how hard that can be to go through life with those sort of feelings. And so when you have thoughts, you know, when you have suicidal thoughts, people, you kind of have a tendency to hide it, especially because other people instantly judge you on that. I was like, if you're suicidal, you're probably homicidal too. Or if you're suicidal, I don't want to get close to you because, you know, you'll end your life at any time.
Well,
you know,
I think it's a stigma, and it's idea of the person being unstable, which don't think is accurate. Obviously, there are unstable people that have been suicidal, but there are also people that are just existing. And, you know, existence is not always fun. The one thing that we can focus... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Michael.
Sorry. I was just going to cap that with the one thing we can all hold on to is that things always change. And that means there's always a new horizon, and there's always hope for a better future. But I do think... you know, for me, I have dealt with much the same. I can't compare, you know, severities, and I won't even try, but I've had, you know, I think we all have, but I have also had dark thoughts, and I've also been severely self-critical, but I realize that, you know, the opportunity to experience life is just too much to give up. There's too much to experience, too much to find out. You know, I want to read the next chapter. But I'm going on to a tangent. So I think we can, coming back onto this.
Well, I think also, Tabitha, if I can say, other people might react harshly or seemingly indifferent because they feel helpless. They don't know what to do with them.
And nihilism.
I think, unfortunately, we do not have a mental health awareness. For a lot of people don't have mental health awareness, like the neurological diseases and stuff. We even call it a disease, and it's not a disease. There's no cure for this. This is something that people suffer from, and instead of us trying to understand it, people fear it, like most things they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's hard, especially because I think last month was Mental Awareness Month, and so people were like, oh, we should all meditate and become better, and I'm like, that's not what we mean when we say mental health awareness.
Yeah.
That's great, and I'm glad that you guys are doing that to become mental healthier, but that's not what mental health awareness was. It was more for an understanding, especially for people who suffer from autism and suicide and bipolar diseases and all that stuff. Like that's why we started that month, you know. But I wanted to also give a shout out to Wendy, who said, we are so critical of ourselves. We push and push and then give and give, just trying to be really good people and spread kindness, respect, and love. And we forget that we should be a part of that. And I have to agree with her, Wendy. I'm with you on that. We have a tendency to give so much of ourselves to other people. We forget, wait, I need oxygen too. You know, it's kind of like that airplane adage of put your oxygen mask on first before assisting others. You know, and we forget to do that. If we don't fill ourselves up first, we don't have anything else to give.
Mm-hmm.
And so thank you, Wendy, for pointing that out.
Absolutely.
So when, Tabitha, so when you had the light bulb and when you said, oh, this is like the universe's message to me, what was your process then? And if you don't mind me asking, what was your journey from that point to now? That you're obviously so willing to share, and look, that's huge. Thank you very much for that.
I don't have secrets.
Okay. So what was the journey? How did you start to, turn things around? What was your inner dialogue along the way?
Sure. So honestly, the self-bullying thing has been around for a long time for me. Obviously, it's been around since I was a kid, and trying to figure out why I couldn't make friends. And then, you know, obviously, as I got older, it was more like, why can't I keep a job? And then I ended up going through a divorce, and then I was like, and a really strange, very emotional divorce. And so going through that also sent me down, you know, the rabbit hole. And then I was a writer, and then I gave up on writing, thinking I was never good enough, or I didn't have anything good enough to say that people would want to read about. And so I have a tendency to kind of give up on myself too easily, I think. Or I have a death grip on things and I don't let them go. And so, even like my marriage, so to share my backstory in my marriage, my husband came out as transgender and, was going to start his transformation into a her. And so, that was a huge transition for me, and I wanted to make the marriage work. I had made vows for better or worse, and so I was going to work on this. But she wanted to explore her new body and didn't want to stay married. And then the second time I found her cheating, I felt like it was time that I had to just let her go. And so I sank into this huge depression, and I had to pull, like, do you know those moments when you don't learn to change until you've hit rock bottom, and then suddenly you're like sitting in a world that's been hit by a nuclear bomb, and you're finally going, wait a minute, I think it's time for me to move on. I can't stay here anymore. And that was one of those moments for me. And so I had started the healing process. I've done things like I even just trying to make a list for myself. What are 10 great things about yourself? And I couldn't even fill up that list. You know, what are 10 things that you do well? And I was like, well, I'm really good at beating myself up. You know, that doesn't count. You know? And so, you know, those are things that, you know, like if I hadn't gotten off that floor, if I hadn't started the healing process, I wouldn't be where I am today, which where I am today is so much happier. I have found a partner who actually helps me move forward. He's great. He's my inspiration for so many things. He's gotten me writing again. Actually, he was the reason I came back for my doctorate.
Oh, that's awesome.
He's the reason that I'm here. Yeah, he introduced me to the world of cryptids and UFOs and the paranormal. I was like, this is an amazing world. Why haven't I not lived here before?
Yeah. So, I mean, right off the bat, I mean, we already have a bunch of great stuff to put on the list. I mean, we have great sense of humor, curiosity, you know, and I think, you know, a couple of people have made some great points, and I want to also relate Jerry. She said, and I was thinking the same thing, our stories are the greatest gifts we can share. Please write your stories. And that was thinking the same thing. You know, you don't do it for anybody else. Do it for you, because it's a wonderful process.
Yeah, and I've learned that. Like, I need to stop writing for other people. There needs to not be a for. Mm-hmm. I need to do it for me. And when I was talking to people, they wanted to hear my story of my marriage and my divorce and why I had fought for something that clearly was slowly dying out anyway. And I've also had religious friends who were like, I could have never stayed with someone because, you know, that's a sin and stuff like that. And of course, to me, it wasn't. To me, that's just who I was. I wasn't going to end a marriage because, you know, I made a contract. But there's a part of me now that realizes it was so toxic and it wasn't the person that I had married anymore. And so it took me a lot to realize I was more than just this person's wife. I had to learn to be an individual again. And I think that's why that self-critic came out so hard. And actually, when I had met you guys, I was just starting again to heal that critic. And I like to think of it now as it's not a bully, it's a coach. And it really is trying to help you. And the problem is that it's turning that idea of critic into coaching. That's the hardest thing we do on ourselves. And I like to try and tell people who are working on this same thing with me that the best way to turn it into a coach is think of if your best friend or your sister or your son, daughter, your parents, what if they made this same mistake? What would you tell them? Because you wouldn't tell them what your internal bully is telling you. You would tell them something different. You would be understanding, and you'd be like, what did we learn out of this?
I love the way you put that. Go on. I'm sorry.
No.
Can I inject here? Because I really want to talk more about this coaching thing in a second, because that's huge. That's a discussion in itself. So if we can backspace for a moment.
Sure.
Dr. Zach has asked that, does the voice come from a challenging parent or being bullied at school? When did you first really realize you were bullied by your own thoughts? Like, was there something pre-marriage in there that amplified through this marriage and divorce?
So I should let you guys know that I do have my master's degree in psychology before I even started here. And so I already know where the internal voice comes from. So I have an actual answer for that. From a psychology perspective, your internal voice actually starts when you're a toddler. When you learn to talk to yourself, you're also mimicking the people around you. And this includes parents.
Huge.
So you are also now Now, this continues through about the age of six. So it isn't just your parents. It is your school teachers. It is the other children around you. And unfortunately, children can be quite evil mm-hmm. to each other. Those sources of your bully can actually come from different sources. Those, unfortunately, around you, if you have a great caregiver, a great mom or a great aunt or a great uncle or dad or grandparents who are raising you and they're very caring, it can make the difference between a kid who's learning to draw with crayons, they make one mistake and they're proud of it still, or they make one mistake and throw their paper across the room. It's that difference of, are you teaching your kids to learn to embrace it and be proud of it no matter if there's a mistake, just proud that they did it, or are you teaching them to just get mad every time they make a mistake?
You know, thank you for saying that, Tabitha. With my childhood, I had a wonderful grandmother. And it was her voice, her encouragement, her wisdoms that had me think mm-hmm. and had me realize that I'm more than just, you know, being around all these other dysfunctional people.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Even at a very young age. So when you're talking, you know, that toddler to age six, you know, and of course, I think that's the age of when we start to see how we are different from others around age four.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
If somebody has two TVs, we only have one.
Yes.
What's the word for that?
Envy.
Yeah, it's true. But there's a term that's given for that in psychology, but how we start to see those differences. But if you have that one individual, that one human being that really sees you, it can make all the difference, no matter all these other voices. Mm-hmm. So who did you have when you were that young?
For me, it was, honestly, I think it was the kids at school, because I've always, no matter what, tried so hard to fit in. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to give away my age here, but in the 80s, you didn't have psychological testing and diagnostics like they do for kids now.
Right.
And I've been adult. I have been tested as an adult, and I have Asperger's, or what they now are considered inside of the autism spectrum.
Okay.
And if I'd have known that as a kid, I think I would have been given different tools and I would have understood why I was so different from mm-hmm. everybody else. But like, even my mom remembers, because I have loving parents. I have great parents. They have taught me to get back up no matter what, get back up and try again. And so I don't blame my parents at all for my bullying. I was bullied by other kids. And I think there were a few teachers in there too who didn't understand how to deal with me, if that mm-hmm. makes sense.
Yep.
And so I think that that's where a lot of my criticism comes from, is that.
How does your autism display? In what degree of, you know what I mean, that dissociative from the social interactions?
Yes. I actually, what's funny is they actually say autistic kids get along better with much older or much younger people, and I'm that person, and I've always been that, you know, like, which is why I teach silver sneakers, you know?
Yeah, of course.
And so, and kids just love me. I'll sit in restaurants, and they run up to me for no reason and sit down, and I'm like, I don't know who you are.
Yeah.
But it's, I just noticed, like, from a social aspect, I get very nervous in social situations. I also, I don't know if you've noticed, but I have a tendency to ramble on.
You're not rambling
when
at all.
She's serious.
Nervous. I feel like I am, but I'm glad you guys are appreciating some of the points that I'm making.
Oh,
but
absolutely. I mean, I see a lot of, you know, myself in the story so far, but.
So when, Tabitha, so when you, and we're going to fast forward now.
Sure.
When the light bulb hit you about being a self-coach, because I think your story, I'm thinking not just Michael and I in varying degrees can relate to this. I'm sure everyone listening to mm-hmm. some degree can appreciate what you're saying. And when you turned this into a self-coach, what were the triggers for you? Because you obviously have a huge background, you know, and a master's in psychology is no joke. Now you go to IMHS and you're learning about self in a whole other way.
Yes.
And
yes.
part of this group. So how did you make that transition into coach?
So this was interesting. So like you guys have this test inside the program to go your what's your psychic abilities. And I took the test, and I think I ended up with, like, negative five. No, I'm just kidding. You can't get a negative. But
wow.
No, you can't get a negative. But it was so low. Like, I think I got one card out of, I think, the 25 you get to pick from. I was like, I have no psychic abilities at all. And instead of beating myself up, I just went and said, it's something you're going to have to work on if you want psychic abilities. Clearly, you don't have them right now. And so to do this, this is some of the things that I did. So I tried to remove polarized thinking. So I don't know if you guys know what polarized thinking is, but polarized thinking is saying things like never, no one, nothing, or on the other side, everyone, everything, always. Mm-hmm. And so those are polarized thoughts. And so instead of saying everyone hates me, you say more specifically, you say this person doesn't like this part of me.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So you're not saying everything and always, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
It does. And one thing I was really happy to hear is you had touched on, you know, the language that you speak to yourself with, and so important. And exactly what you just said there, you know, and avoiding polarizing language is, you know, aside from even growing psychic ability, just good for the self-wellness.
Yeah. Yeah.
So did you begin to emotionally shift when you're doing that mental dialogue?
Yes.
At what point is the emotional shift?
Well, that's the thing is, I know this is such the cheesiest movie on the planet, but I love The Secret. It is so cheesy, but I love listening to it because it gives you that idea that the law of attraction. And I don't know if all of you know about the law of attraction, but the law of attraction basically says everything you ask for will come to you. We all have a genie. You can have anything that you want. You just have to wish for it. And I loved this idea. And The Secret's one of them I'm going to go into. There are much better movies out there. And of course, I can't think of all. Oh, What the Bleep Do We Know is another great one, too.
I love that. I love that is one of my all-time favorite movies. What the Bleep Do We Know?
Yep.
I have issues with the other one only yes. because I think when we and I want to make this really clear, when we're thinking about the law of attraction, when you have go into the universal principles, it has to apply to everybody on Earth, not just us in our own little mm-hmm. reality.
Yes.
So well, in our own little reality, you can wish for $1 million, but
yeah, there's only so many yachts to go around. But
I know, but and that's not a bad thing if you're living in the United States or Canada or England or somewhere. But it's not a universal principle in that way if you're living in Africa or Sudan or somewhere else. And so it's a tricky kind of thing because that's where yeah. I say the four laws work together to make one universal law.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which, you know, there's many other things to our psyches and to our life experiences, and each of us has our own ride. But mm-hmm. it's very obviously very impactful to you.
Well, and
yes.
what the bleep do you know yes. was way more impactful to me.
And it And The Secret was just my introduction to it. It just happened yeah. to be pop culture at the time sure. I watched it, and it became yeah. just an introduction for me to go, I need to dig deeper.
Absolutely. And, you know, we yeah. talked about the law of attraction at IMHS, as you know, and yes. I think a big part of that is when you what you focus on, right, is what you get. And a lot of times that comes to you in the form of energy in life, and it comes to the form of, you know, when you're focusing on something, you're changing your behaviors. And you are signaling to the universe that, you know, you're trying to attune with it. But, and I think that it, and I, again, I'm not saying this to you because I don't think I'm saying anything that you don't already know, Tabitha, but I would say that, my take is also that, when we apply the law of attraction, it is in a deeper level than just the material world. It's on a deeper connection with the universe.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Occasionally, you know, I constantly have ninjas and assassins trying to attack me, so occasionally you'll hear some scuffle in the background, but I know it's a hectic life I lead. But
so from there, when you started to shift emotionally, Tabitha, what then, like how much, let's say on a scale of 1 to 10, how much has the bully in you diminished?
It actually has diminished a lot. I would say, especially from when I was in high school through getting my college degree and stuff like that, and seeing, I mean, I don't know if you guys know the old adage, but most psychology students are there to diagnose themselves.
I've heard
that. It's, yeah. And it's true. And, yeah. You're searching for answers you don't have. I know, I do too. But you just don't have answers to why you feel you think so different from everybody else. And so I was always in that curiosity of, okay, why am I different? And so, again, the secret was introduced, and so I started learning the law of attraction, and then that's when the emotional change started happening as well. And I started bringing things into my life, or at least changing my emotional feelings towards it, because that's one of the things they talk about is you can't control your thoughts. Your thoughts are actually there. So your left brain is basically your protector. It is trying to make – it is your survivor. It's the reason you're still alive. And it is also the meanest part of you, because it's kind of like the drill sergeant. I'm here to get you through this war. And so when it's yelling at you, it is trying to get your attention on, you made this mistake. You don't want to do this again. Remember what happened last time. And so it really is there to help you survive. And to get kind of past that and into the coaching side, I had to change my emotional feelings towards it and go, I want to attract more positive things into my life. And honestly, the emotional change helps that voice. I was surprised how much when you have more positive things coming in, that coach inside of you is starting to go, okay, this is, we want to keep this going. Of course, I still have those moments. And I mean, and there's no cure for depression. There's no cure for anxiety, you know. So those things still can hit me in waves, and that critic still comes out at times. But I have learned to also be able to step back at moments and go, okay, what is my critic trying to really say? Why is it showing me these memories? What happened that I'm triggering this anxiety? And try and step back and go and look at it from a third person perspective.
All right, we are back. All right, so, yeah, and I'm so sorry. There was a furry monster charged into my room and tried to attack me, and in the process, jostled the computer, which caused the broadcast to stop. It's not my fault at all. Dr. Ricky's a liar. But but I'm so sorry, Tabitha. You were right in the middle of a good good point, and we lost our broadcast.
Well, no problem. Where we were at is that emotional shift that you mm-hmm. were in, and what I find what I find extraordinary too is, look, it takes a huge amount of discipline and desire, and at the root of all of this, Tabitha, because I speak from a little bit of experience. I don't have Asperger's, but I challenges. Everybody's got stuff.
Well, I'm trying to think. I do.
The desire to become a better human being. And yes. When you're interested in yourself, and that's where I've said this for so many years, people think it's so egotistical, and it's not. The only one you should really be interested in yourself is in your life is yourself. Everybody yes. else, yes, be interested, but how do I think? How do I process? How do I feel? What made me think that way? What made me do that? Why did I behave that way? How come I reacted that way? Where did I get that? Where did that seed come from? Why mm-hmm. I want to change this. How do I change this? And that's the desire to become an evolving human being who wants to be better. And to me, it's at a real spiritual level as well. Someone who's connected with themselves to do that. And then the discipline, because it's so easy to cave in, to say, oh, I'm so tired of this. Mm-hmm. Do I really have to learn something else? Oh, didn't I fix this a while ago? What do you mean there's another angle to learn?
Well, it's also about nihilism.
Exhausted. Yeah,
I know. I mean, I have had to, you know, try to correct for this. I can at times be nihilistic, and I get to the point, well, what does it matter? You know, what does it matter if I do this or do that? You know, nothing matters, da-da-da-da-da. And then, of course, you come out the other side and you realize, you know, so much of it matters to us in our sphere. And there's so much we don't know and have yet to learn. And that's, there's an excitement to that. And I think we all can share that in this community, in this, you know, little chat we're having, because we're, you know, we're all curious. That's what brings us to this exploration of metaphysics. But
well, and Wendy says at the same time to not be narcissistic. And I think the difference, and I'd like to articulate this, the difference between narcissistic versus self-interest is I don't believe in my self-interest that the world revolves around me. Mm-hmm. I absolutely don't believe that. I think that I'm connected. And if we're metaphysicians, as we are, Michael, like you say, and we're all in this together, that, you know, I understand that we have this dynamic and I have to coexist with this world and I want what's best for this world. But if I am not, and Tabitha said it earlier, if I am not good for me, I'm good for no one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean by that self-interest to become a better human being.
Absolutely. And I think another critical aspect is just remember to keep things in balance. Remember that we are all equally deserving of the good things in life. And it's a great segue into that kind of duality of the do no harm, do right to self and others. And, you know, for some of us, not, I don't think really anybody in this group, because just the nature of who we are, that'll mean being nicer to others, you know, actual narcissists and such. But for many of us, I think for us, it means being nicer to ourselves, because we already elevate other people ahead of us. And the balance comes in bringing us up to that level.
Yeah, so I think that we unfortunately have a tendency to think self is a four-letter bad word. Mm. And especially the word selfish. And I think that there needs to be that shift to go, it's okay to be selfish. It's okay to want things. It's okay to need things in your life and not be put down because you put yourself before someone else. And not, you know, like it, there's that we always, unfortunately, we always talk about the people who sacrificed everything for everyone else. We give them praise, but we forget that, you know, people aren't successful unless they've started doing things for themselves. And you know, and unfortunately, I think that's why some of us end up in the situations we're in, is because we weren't selfish. We didn't do what was best for us. You know, we did what we thought was best for someone else. And so I think that needs to be that shift from selfish is a bad thing to be to it's okay.
So at what point did you join IMHS, Tabitha? Remind me.
I joined probably about a year ago, I think I joined, and then I started the radio right away.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've been with us for a while.
Yep.
You sure have.
And
at what point are you in your studies?
I actually have one more class for my master's degree, so I have to go because I'm doing mine in cryptozoology and UFOlogy.
Good
so
for
I have
you.
I have to go and actually go squatching. I haven't done that yet. And then I have to do my report.
I would love to go squatching.
Oh, that'd be what?
You know,
what general area?
Sorry,
I was gonna say, what general area of the country are you in?
I am actually in what they call the Upper Peninsula, which is Upper Michigan. There is up by the lakes, there's this little place that's called the UP. I am a Uper. If you don't know what that is, look it up. But I'm right up next to Canada. So, Vicky, if you want to go squatching.
I'm on the other side of the country. So
you are. I was going to say you're probably on the other end, but I am up towards Canada.
I've talked to lots of people with sightings, and we got squatches all over the place.
Yeah, we have what's called the Menominee Sasquatch is the sightings that's been up here. So I'm on the hunt for him.
That should be fun.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, absolutely.
On this process through IMHS and evidently through your new partner and the school, it's been life altering. And for you to be so open and, you know, it's that old saying of, you know, we're not vulnerable if we're not afraid to be vulnerable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've said that for years. And you want to know something about me? I'll tell you, because you can't hurt me.
Absolutely. So that's the thing. When you realize that, when you take away the fact that those vulnerabilities are any kind of vulnerability, you take away any power of it, and you don't fear it.
And that's what you're an example of, Tabitha, that you
are
willing to share what others would say is, and you know what I mean by this, a weakness, or how could you say that, or, you know, you're exposing yourself. You're just saying, I am who I am, and this is what I am, but I'm, like, you're articulate, like, truly articulate, well-educated, smart, and this humor that you have with yourself is, so I would say you took that self-deprecating thing into a, I'm kind of funny. <You know? laughs> And, like, that was really a dumb thing for me to do, and that's kind of funny.
Yep.
And turning it into that humor, do you find that that was a big part of, like, I'm sure you've always been rather funny lady, but do you feel that that's expanded also now that you've lightened up and you can see yourself in a different way?
Yeah, I would say, you know, like, I think I've always had a great sense of humor. I'm funny. Come on now, I'm funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but not everybody knows that, so sometimes I have to tell them. But but it's one of those things that I do have a tendency to deflect things with humor, too. I feel like I think I have a – I don't have a problem sharing things with people because – what you say to me will never be nearly as harmful as the things that I've said to myself. So you could never hurt me as much as I've hurt me. So I feel like that's why I've become so open. I also have a tendency to, like, let a lot of things roll off of me for that reason. Mm. You know, so, like, I...
That's a monster statement.
Mm-hmm.
Stop right there, because that is a huge monster statement. You can't hurt me more than I've hurt myself. Whoa. And if everybody would just take a moment to think about that. And when you feel intimidated by others, or you feel vulnerable to authority, or, you know, any of the other dynamics that you might have with other people where you feel lesser than or smaller than, or, you know, you can't hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm the only one in my head. I hurt myself enough.
All right. Well, we are live. All right. Again, not sure what happened that time. I can't blame it on the dog. But we couldn't connect to Mixler server. Internet was going wonky. I had to restart my computer, and it seems to be better now. So, again, going to vamp for a bit while people, if you don't mind throwing in chat there, so people can reconnect to the broadcast. But I think we're good. The Illuminati and the lizard people are always trying to keep us down. They're always trying to silence the truth. But
Oh, man.
All right. So I see one listener so far.
You know, we were talking about tooting your own horn, I think, is where we both left off. And I would like to say it's fair enough to the world to say... I'm good at this. I'm not good at that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really good at this. People look at you and say, no, I am. I'm really good at this. It's like I used to be able to say, I can make a great apple pie, but I suck at brownies. You know?
Yeah.
And so it's about tooting your own horn when we own who we are and we own the different things that we are good at. It's... I don't think it's arrogant or egotistical to say, I'm good at this. I can do this. I may not be as good as somebody else with apple pies, but I'm good at my own apple pies. You either like it or you don't.
Yeah.
And be confident and comfortable with who you are and how you apply yourself to the world. And I don't think it's big tooting in the horn. I think it's just, hey, I'm just good at this and I'm comfortable to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree, Tabitha?
Absolutely.
Have you come to that point?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Got to give yourself a pat on the back. Some, you know, now and again, you know, we have to live with ourselves all the time. So if we're being constantly negative to ourselves, it's going to really reflect on our energy. And if we find, if we, just like you were saying earlier, you let some of the more positive things back in, it really helps. It changes the perception, changes what you see. And again, it's about keeping it in balance. You know, do no right, do harm to yourself and others. I don't think any of us here are in danger of being that, you know, extreme narcissist. I don't think any of us here are going to be, you know, pushing children and the elderly out of the way to get to the lifeboats or anything like that.
So, Tabitha, what advice, when people are being self-critical, and what advice would you give people to help turn the corner, do you think? What
so
would
that's,
be a good start?
So this is such a great question, and I actually had wanted to save this because I love this advice. Someone gave this to me, and I wish I had heard it earlier in my life, but at least now I use it. But the best advice I can give to someone and tell them is you have never made a mistake. And I know you guys are about to blow up and tell me all of the mistakes you've made, or even blow it off in humor and say my whole life is a mistake. But I just want you guys to take a moment and listen when I say.
No, wait, stop. I've only had a couple of ex-husbands who were a mistake.
But I just want you guys to listen when I say, you have never made a mistake. You did the best you could with the knowledge you had at the time and the resources that were available to you.
Thank you.
That is something that I wish someone had said to me when I was younger, but I've taken it much more to heart, because you have to remember hindsight is always 20/20. You can look back and go, oops, that was a mistake. But when you made that mistake, you didn't. You were not making a mistake at that time. You thought you were doing right. And so that's the best thing I can say for people who are suffering from that critic, is step back and tell yourself, it was not a mistake. This is a lesson.
Well said.
That's huge. And thank you for that.
Absolutely.
I know we've had a couple of glitches tonight, and everybody in the chat agrees. This has been a great conversation tonight.
Absolutely,
Wendy.
It has.
And I want to thank you for your openness, your honesty, your forthrightness, just for being you. And sharing with this group that continues to encourage all of us to even look at our own dark side. And, you know, we don't take that challenge very often on this program. And again, it's not because we try to avoid it. It's just very rarely is there somebody willing to say, I have had an issue. And I turned it around, and this is how I turned it around. And that's an enormous amount of power, strength, discipline, and kudos to you. And we're so happy you're a part of this group.
Absolutely.
I am too. I feel like I found a family.
I think of it the same way. And thank you for saying. And, you know, I just have no more profound words than ditto. But I would say that, you know, I love how you put that. You know, we don't make mistakes. I feel like that dovetails wonderfully with the in Oracle card, you know, number one, perfection. We are a perfect work in progress. We're doing
Absolutely.
The best with what we can. We're doing the best we can with what we have. I'm so happy that you brought that up. But it has been a great go ahead.
I know this is a late show. We've had a couple of glitches. Mm-hmm. We're not drawing cards for everybody tonight except for Jerry. So bear with us, Tabitha. Michael, can you draw one card for Jerry? And I'm going to draw a tarot card. And the reason, everyone, is, as Jerry has said in the chat, she's had a health issue, an ablation that was around heart issues, and having a moment. And so we're going to see what the cards turn up for her, and only because it's a special moment.
Absolutely. And I can pull a card, but I don't want to, because now it's going to be your idea. And I was just about to bring that very same thing up. But no. So, Jerry, you're getting a card tonight, and you know, we're wishing you the absolute best. So I have in the Inner Oracle deck, number 42. It's in the Life Skills suit. It is trust and integrity. Integrity means being true to oneself intuitively and sensibly. It is adherence to moral and ethical principles, soundness of moral character, and honesty. A trust betrayed loses integrity, and trust without integrity is empty. Trust, along with communication, is one of the two most important relationship traits. Move forward with integrity, remaining steadfast in the greatest relationship of all, yourself.
Whoa, and powerful that I picked the Two of Hearts with that. So in that relationship to self, as Michael has just said, Jerry, the Two of Hearts, of course, you know, really amplifies that. But also in the Two of Hearts is about partnerships and those you have relationships with. And that would be, in this case, perhaps your medical specialists, people you're working with, but also the people in your life, and allowing them to give you support. And, you know, it's really easy. And in keeping with tonight's conversation, we may give a lot to others, but we also have to be able to receive and give to ourselves and allow other people to love us. So that trust and integrity and being in a sharing space, especially when you're vulnerable and in a time of need. So you've got this, Jerry. You're going to be fine. And trust me, that's an intuitive thought. And thanks for sharing your story with us in the chat and allowing us to do this for you. So you got this. All right. And happy summer solstice to everybody is what I want to say. Longest day of the year. Shortest night. The longest day, and we head into our summertime. It's a great time of year. Enjoy it. And I know there's a lot of people around the world having moments, and we send out a lot of good energy to them, a lot of love and light. And to you, Tabitha, for joining us tonight. You know, we're here for you. Power up.
Thank you guys for having me. This was really fun.
It was. Awesome. It was. Jerry's in chat asking, are we done? You know, she hopes not, because it's been a great conversation. See, and it's been very valuable for us all, I think. And I really appreciate you coming on with us.
Well, maybe you can come back, Tabitha.
I would love that. I would love that.
I mean, well, we're pretty... And, you know, you can't beat the pay, so.
Right.
So I did ask in the chat to Dr. Mike if he'd come on in the next couple of weeks, aside from the fact that, you know, I do want to talk about MUFON and ufology, and I want to ask him questions about that recent Las Vegas instance where, the big beam of light and aliens in somebody's backyard. I also want to ask him about orcas attacking off of, you know, the European coastline, but recently sharks attacking off of Hawaii. And there's something going on. And I want to know Dr. Mike's take on this, if he has one. So, and I'm sure he does, because he's our marine specialist guy. So
it'll be very interesting. I mean, it does kind of get that, you know, nature starting to attack us, Avatar style from Pandora. But it's going to be interesting. We've reached out, so hopefully we'll be able to connect on some dates. And we're gonna rope all of you in eventually. We're gonna have Wendy back. We're gonna have Tabitha back. So as much as I can do to not have to, you know, generate content or ideas, I'm going to do that. So, all right. So, you know, it's come to that time of the evening. And thank you, everybody, that hung in there with us, because we did have one dog-related glitch and one I have no idea. I'm going to blame the Illuminati or the Gremlins glitch. And just thank you so much. Thank you, Tabitha. And Tabitha, any last thoughts before we wrap up?
No, just be kind to yourselves. Don't beat yourself up anymore. You're a good person. You're doing the best you can. So,
I love it. And Dr. Vicky?
No, ditto. Those are good words to end with.
Ditto is powerful. I told you. Well, again, just thank you to everybody that joined us. Thank you for sticking with us through those glitches. We look forward to having you join us next week. And, of course, until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.